You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversations about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, controversy over religious freedom, or is it religious discrimination? Another fabulous barn find turns up a bunch of classic cars right up the street from here. Plus, every embarrassing question you ever wanted answered about the bathroom. Let's meet the friends busy rewriting her life story. It's our producer, Brooke Peterson.
Hey, Phil. Brian Williams is back in the news. Oh, wait, no, sorry. This is Bill O'Reilly, actually. Bill O'Reilly is in the news. Ooh. More later.
He knows the difference between comedy and news, we think. Chris Martin is here.
A successor has been selected to take over for Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. And the question is, does anybody know who this guy is?
Who? All right, very good. We're going to get things rolling here. And thanks for joining us once again, Brooke. You're our producer and doing a great job. Always great to see you in the studio.
My pleasure.
So the first first matter of business is it Brian Williams? Is it Bill O'Reilly? Did Bill O'Reilly go all Brian Williams on us?
I think maybe so. There are certainly a lot of similarities in this latest little nugget here. It turns out that Bill O'Reilly has been known to share a story that goes back to 1982 and his coverage of the Buenos Aires riots. Well, in his story, he contends that things got dicey, got really dangerous and tricky. His cameraman fell. People were running around, and there was blood coming out of his ear. And somehow or another, Bill O'Reilly, was able to drag him off.
But the cameraman with blood oozing out of his ears.
Yes. And now, his cameraman is saying, "Nuh-uh, I wasn't even with Bill O'Reilly at the time we got separated." So, yeah.
I was in a taxi taking fire.
Right, exactly. Something very, a little deja vu, should we say? I don't know. So, I'm just curious if Bill O'Reilly is going to suffer the same consequences with his faulty memory.
Here's what I think.
Our old friend,
maybe you
Brian.
Agree with this. Brian Williams took the fall for this whole thing. Mm-hmm. That I am going to go out on a limb and say every single personality on television and many in stage and screen who are older than maybe 45 years of age have rewritten their personal history in one way or another to seem more glamorous. And as we've pointed out on this program before, some little old thing called the internet crept up on these people and gave every single person sitting on a couch everywhere in the world, in every little pocket in the world, the freedom to voice their opinion at any given moment and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm just as powerful as you are at this moment because I can call BS, and I know a BSer when I hear one because I'm good at it too.
The internet has a very long memory.
Yeah. And so 1982, going back to 82, come on. There was no internet. Nobody had social media back in 82. I mean, the internet was there, but nobody was using it largely, except academicians and the government and so on. So, go ahead. Make up your history, and people are going to catch up. Now, why the cameraman now has a reason to come out, I don't know. Maybe when you do that as the cameraman, nobody knew his name 2 weeks ago, but today, perhaps, what is his name anyway?
The cameraman who is being discussed is Ignacio Medrano Carbo. But he is saying there is this other person that may be getting confused with him named Robert Moreno.
Oh, so there's a chance that Bill O'Reilly's telling the truth?
No, because Ignacio is saying that Moreno was not even a cameraman at the time. Bill O'Reilly is thinking maybe – Bill O'Reilly is saying it wasn't Ignacio. It was this other guy, Robert Moreno. And and Ignacio's like, that's impossible because Robert Moreno wasn't even a cameraman. I was your cameraman. And there are other people from CBS corroborating this, who was with who and who was paired with who. Mm-hmm. And everybody – it just seems like a kind of a big mess.
Yeah. All right. Now, Bill O'Reilly doesn't step down. He's not the kind that steps down from something like that. He'll just say, oh, come on, give me a break.
Well, but do we have to? Just because he wants us to?
Well, you could decide not to watch his program or not to buy his books. That's the way the free market works. I mean, I was surprised that Brian Williams stepped down, frankly. The moment he took that six-month leave, I said, all right, that's it. He's done.
He didn't step down voluntarily, Phil.
No.
Right. So why can't Bill O'Reilly just not step down voluntarily?
I'm not in favor, generally speaking, of these stepping down episodes. Okay. Now, there are extenuating circumstances. I don't think the Brian Williams thing rises to the level of step-downedness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a word?
It is now.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Well, here's the difference between the two stories that I think weighs heavily in the minds of Americans.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
Yes. In one situation, the Brian Williams situation, you're talking about stolen valor, and really you're dealing with our nation's troops in a wartime scenario. In another situation, you're talking about a riot in a South American country.
Mm-hmm.
Two very different circumstances, I think, in the eyes of the consumers as far as which one is more offensive.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? All right. Well, I think you're onto something there. And one guy is the guy we count on to bring us the information we need to carry on in life. The other guy is a guy who provides commentary and opinion and that sort of thing. And I think those guys are much more adept at fending off the slings and arrows than the other guys, who we try to hold up to a higher plateau, I think.
I would agree. Yes. Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
You with
okay,
me?
Fine.
So the vote is Bill O'Reilly stays, and he writes another book. And he writes a book called Killing Ignacio Mendocino Chingadero. What was his name? IMC. I wrote down the initials.
It was Ignacio Medrano Carbo.
Okay, I was close.
So close.
All right. Okay, next up, more controversy. Mm-hmm. This whole Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana, a lot of people are, people are happy about it. It passed. The governor of Indiana signed it into law. But then a whole bunch more people are upset about it because they say, hey, this amounts to discrimination. And remind us again, what does the act do?
It's called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And basically what this act does is give for-profit businesses the legislative protection to refuse service to people that the business deems as an offense to their religious beliefs.
So members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community,
exactly.
For instance, they might not be able to go, say, to a bakery and get a gay wedding cake.
Correct.
And if the owner of the bakery, for religious reasons, does not want to make that cake, then this law protects
now
the business owner.
Now they have that protection, So it makes it legal. Or certainly not illegal to deny service to people just because they disagree with their personal
right
situation.
It's interesting. Pat Hayden, who you may or may not know, famous football player, played for the Rams and went to USC, and now he's the athletics director over there at USC, I believe. His son is gay, and he says he's the proud father of a gay son. So he's skipping a NCAA meeting in Indiana,
and
he's boycotting.
There's been a lot of cancellations. Wilco, a band, a popular band, was supposed to have a concert on May 7th, and over the weekend, within days of this legislation or this bill passing, they've canceled their concert, and so they will not.
NCAA, everybody has their brackets going now in the basketball tournament, and NCAA is headquartered in Indiana and in Indianapolis, to be specific, and they're considering severing ties with the state over this. Mm-hmm. Now, is this sort of act spreading to other states?
Yeah, well, there's something very similar. This act, I'm not sure where this trend originated from so close together in time, but there's about 20 states that have something very similar on the books to pass, and Arizona is up next. Arizona is using the same wording and same verbiage, and although Indiana now is sort of backtracking over the past couple of days with all of this hoopla, Arizona is saying, no, we have no intention of correcting, editing, or changing anything about this.
We like it just fine. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
All right.
Arizona.
Okay. And I wonder if America will like the new host of The Daily Show just fine. Already, controversy. This guy's gone from hero to pariah in the matter of 24 hours. Now that people have dug up his background as a comedian. And Chris is going to tell you more about this guy who I honestly have never heard of. Next, here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, here on Phil Hewlett and Friends, we strive to be accurate whenever we know what the heck we're talking about. And from time to time, that does happen. And Brooke, as our producer, she had a violent reaction. We just finished cleaning it up during the break there to a story that we were doing before we took a break, where she implied that Arizona was going to go the same route as Indiana with this Religious Freedom Act. And that wasn't accurate?
Delete all the times I said Arizona and instead replace those times with Arkansas.
Okay, you're sure it's not another A state?
There you go.
It's
Arkansas.
Not Alabama.
It's
not
Arkansas.
Not
Arkansas.
Alaska.
No.
That's understandable. It would have been a little weird if it had been like Louisiana or something
yeah.
And you... But A starts with an A, starts with an A, same amount of syllables.
Uh-huh. I'm human. I'm not Bill O'Reilly.
No. But what
He's
else?
He's superhuman.
What else are we going to learn about you today? My goodness. First, you're lying about the news. All right. Chris, so the Daily Show, Jon Stewart, who's been the face of that show, it's his show, right? I mean,
just, called fine. The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
I think it's weird that you have a show. And then you step down, and the show lives without you.
Well, the show was going on before he got there, too.
Oh, who was the host of The Daily Show?
I don't know who it was.
Somebody we've forgotten.
Somebody we've forgotten by now, because Jon Stewart's been doing it for 15 years or
so. It wasn't Bill O'Reilly, was it?
17 or 18, yeah.
No.
No, not Bill O'Reilly.
Okay. All right. Just double checking.
So the show itself is its own entity.
Oh, okay.
And the
fine.
Host chair is replaceable. It's just Jon Stewart has become symbolic of it.
All right. So I stand corrected. Okay, fine. So he's getting a replacement, and I've never heard of this guy. Who is he?
His name's Trevor Noah.
Who?
And he's been tapped on the shoulder to take over for Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. He's a comic, Phil.
Yeah.
A relatively unknown 31-year-old South African comic.
Okay.
Now, we may not know him as a household name, but he does in fact sell out stadiums around the world, especially overseas,
mm-hmm.
for his comedy stylings. And he's actually pretty funny. I've seen some of his clips.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Now, you get named to something like The Daily Show, which in America is one of the most watched television shows on network TV.
Whip out the microscope.
Television. Whip out the microscope.
The anal probe, whatever it is that they do to make sure that they know every single thing about you before you grace the American television airwaves. Isn't that correct?
That's it. People want to know who they're going to be watching at night. So people start to rifle through this guy's background, and they found some old tweets.
Uh-oh.
He's got something like 9 or 10,000 tweets. And now these tweets are all over the web, and there's a lot of backlash. Is this guy sexist? Is he anti-Semitic? And I have a couple of them here. They are slightly paraphrased.
Yes.
Here's the first one. Oh, yay, the weekend is here. People are going to get drunk and think that I'm sexy, says fat chicks everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Here's another one. Everyone tries to foul Lionel Messi when he has the ball, but he won't go down easy, just like Jewish chicks.
Wow.
One more. A hot white woman with a nice butt is like a unicorn. Even if you see one, you'll probably never get to ride it.
Wow.
God.
You want another one?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yes.
It's funny. Sure. Why not? We're laughing.
Watching Olympic women's hockey is like lesbian porn without the porn.
Wow. Wow. See, all right.
So lesbians, Jewish.
Now, Brooke, should he step down?
Yes.
Really?
Only as long as Jon Stewart can come back.
Well, look, you know...
I want John.
Go back. I mean, John has the benefit of the many years that he was the host of The Daily Show. But if you go back to all of his stand-up comedy, prior to this period in time where we are so overly sensitive about every single thing. In humor, I bet there were all sorts of things that Jon Stewart said in his early career that we, if we knew then what we know now, or if we know now, if we...
If we had a camera phone then, if we cared enough to know now what we should have known then,
then Jon Stewart would have gotten all kinds of controversy when he was selected to.
Well, don't think Jon Stewart hasn't faced his fair share of controversy throughout his career.
Yeah, you know what? If you're not stepping through a controversial minefield as a comic, you're probably not relevant.
Yeah, that's it.
Is that fair enough to say?
True that.
Okay. And if you are a comic, there's a different style of humor that you have than most people in mainstream media. When you're standing on stage, it's different, you know?
That's true.
You know what else is funny?
What's that?
When you go on safari and the animals fight back.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, have you guys ever been to one of those drive-through safari parks?
Well, yeah, they used to have one not far from here in Southern California. When I was a little kid, they had Lion Country Safari. And here's how it works. And this was before cars... were made out of pliable aluminum and paint that scratched and chipped in a moment. I mean, back in the day, all the cars were parked on the street, and the kids played football and ran up the hood and the rooftop of the cars, and the cars were no worse for wear.
Nice.
So you would pay your tickets, and everybody would go inside, and they'd read the big sign: "Keep your windows rolled up. Do not feed the kiddies. And drive slowly, no faster than 5 miles per hour, and feel free to stop for a while. But if there's people behind you, be pleasant and considerate." And it was in a time in the 1960s when people still knew what consideration was, and so and responsibility as well. And so we would drive through there in our car, and there were lions everywhere. I mean, they were just right there.
Were there any other animals commingling with the lions?
There were, like, there was a
elephant,
a gazelle carcass, and things of that sort, you know, nearby. And so you would drive through, and the lions, the males and the females, would come right up. Sometimes they'd stand on your hood.
Awesome.
They'd come right up to the window, and you would just drive through. And you know, maybe you got a scratch on your car, maybe you didn't. It was an exciting thing, and you all, you know, it was like
a battle scar.
$10 for a family. Mm-hmm. Something like that. But imagine today, first of all, never mind the scratches and the dents on modern cars and the amount of money it would cost you to get it fixed, but how many families have the parenting skills that would pre-prepare their children to make sure that they don't roll down the window and put their hand out to pet the kitty? There would be kids getting eaten left and right, don't you think, in today's world?
Don't you think like some sort of innate survival instinct would prevent the kids from rolling down the windows?
Have you ever been to a shopping mall?
Yeah, and kids
no
look
survival
at these,
instinct.
I think they look at these animals as
big pets.
Yeah,
have you ever stopped at a crosswalk in your car to watch the behavior in the crosswalk? there is no consideration for one's safety when one is out in public. It's almost like they think, well, mom and dad are going to save me somehow. There's no way I'll get hit by a car.
That's true. Yeah.
I'll just step off this curb while I'm texting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've even seen those videos where people have their sunroof open going through these safari parks, and a giraffe will stick its head down through the sunroof and eat food out of the child and or mother or father's hands.
That's crazy.
And even then I'm going, you know, that animal's got teeth. Yeah. And if it grabs a thumb instead of one of those you know, peanuts that you bought at the gift shop.
Well, this whole conversation started because something odd happened on safari.
That's right. There was an Australian man in South Africa, and he decided to go to a safari park near Johannesburg. He's cruising along, windows down, and a full-grown lion jumps into the car and starts mauling his legs.
Oh!
Full-grown lion.
Now what would you pay?
Jumps into the car.
Yeah. Jumps in through one of the open windows in the car and just starts chewing on his legs like it's his steak dinner.
Oh. Gosh.
Yeah.
And so the guy survived?
Ripped off?
Did he get any of his legs back or what?
The guy survived. He did not have to have his legs amputated. The lion ended up jumping back out through the window. I think the guy was being pretty aggressive with the lion, and the lion didn't want his meal fighting back.
So what's he say now?
He put pictures on Facebook of his legs all torn to pieces, torn to shreds.
Yeah, all right.
And he's being real nonchalant about the whole thing. You know, he put quotes on there like, Could have and should have been a lot worse, but chicks dig scars, so I'll be sweet.
Wow.
Sounds like a California surfer.
That's a great
Australian
attitude.
Surfer guy.
That's a great attitude.
Man.
Says when the swelling and bruises go down, he'll be back home and dancing in no time.
Hey, here's another kind of safari that we didn't know was happening. An editor for Playboy.com was digging around the office for old photos, and he made an interesting discovery. In the 70s and 80s, four actors had secret underground tunnels directly from their homes to the Playboy Mansion. Want to know who they were?
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah.
James Caan, Warren Beatty, and Kirk Douglas.
Really?
That was my Kirk Douglas. Yeah. I got the microphone wet on that one. The Playboy editor came across the photos from 1977, showed a large excavation project at the mansion, and after doing a little research, he found the blueprints for the tunnels that led to these guys' houses, which were all pretty close to the mansion in Holmby Hills, California.
Wow.
Not far from Brentwood and Westwood, where UCLA is. But the tunnels apparently don't exist anymore. A staff member says they were closed in 1989, the same year Hugh Hefner married playmate Kimberly Conrad.
Have we talked to Jack Nicholson?
No more tunnels, Hugh.
Enough with the tunnels.
Why, Hugh? I told you to close those tunnels. Hey, you know something else that I love besides tunnels? When somebody stumbles upon a garage or a barn and inside are a bunch of classic cars preserved like in a time capsule, and then the collectors from all over the world start clamoring for the auction, you'd like to own one of these cars, wouldn't you? Of course you would. Well, it's happened again in Orange County, California, not far from here, and we have the details from a county official on the auction date and a description of some of the 69 vintage cars, and not from 1969, they number 69 vintage cars, all found in a barn, and you'll hear about it next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, and this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I don't know about you, but I dream of walking on a farm and into a barn to find a vintage vehicle or two covered under a pile of hay. That's more or less what happened recently in Southern California, but there were more than just two cars. 69 vehicles dating back to, I think, the 1920s. We'll confirm that in a moment. And let's get a better idea now about these classic vehicles that were stowed away for decades. Joining us live is Orange County's Supervising Deputy Public Administrator, Rosie Arellano. Rosie, hello. How are you?
Good, good. Yourself?
I'm well, thanks. Even better now that you're here. So tell me, where was this barn and what exactly was in it?
The barn is actually a home. It's a home in the city of Buena Park, California. And it's a very large lot. It has a huge yard, and that is exactly where we found about 69 vintage cars. It was definitely something very new to our office. We're typically used to finding, you know, a car or two and maybe a classic car here and there. Definitely this has never happened in my 13 plus.
What's a public administrator's office do typically, though? I mean, you're not out there hunting for cars and barns. I mean, what's the typical day-to-day gig?
Yes, absolutely not. This is definitely a very unique scenario, but we are the district attorney public administrator for the County of Orange, and our main duties are to investigate and safeguard assets of the decedents of our county, as well as locating the legal next of kin.
Interesting. All right. So the fact that you're involved implies that maybe these vehicles now belong to the county. Is that accurate?
No, that is not accurate at all. What we do is we step into the shoes of the decedent, and now that they're passed away, their estate matters. And so when we safeguard the assets, it's so that no misappropriation or they get taken advantage of now that the person has passed away.
Well, that's good. That's a worthy cause, and we're glad that you're there for that. So I've looked at the photos, Rosie. And there's a link, by the way, to the Orange County Register article and their slideshow of photos on our show fun page at philhewlettandfriends.com. And I must say, after looking at the photos, some of these cars, they're not in great shape, are they?
No, they're not. They were out for, we believe, many, many years out just in the elements. And his, again, it was in his backyard, so they weren't covered in any way, shape, or form. They were, a lot of them have a lot of, rat and possum and whatever you can imagine would be in someone's backyard.
Oh.
Made those cars their home. And so a lot of them are in a lot of need for TLC.
Yeah.
There are definitely still a lot of parts that are, and still in very good condition for someone who's interested in.
Yeah, the rats and the squirrels, they love just chewing and gnawing on hoses and rubber and all that sort of thing. And they'll just eat all of those pieces off of there if they don't deteriorate on their own in the first place. But rust and all these other things and leather destroyed. But these cars are all highly restorable, I would imagine.
I would imagine to the experts and being that that's the situation here, we're definitely going to get, the proper appraising expert to give us, a good evaluation and appraisal on.
Oh, you don't have that yet, because I was going to ask you, what are they worth? That's what everybody wants to know.
Yes, and I know we've gotten a huge response from the public, everybody. We did create an email where people who are interested, we are planning on doing some type of action that is still undetermined because we haven't been able to get an appraiser out.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely, yes, a unique asset like this, as we get once in a while on our cases, definitely requires an expert appraiser. We appraise most of the property we get anyway, because we are we have to report to the court of everything that's in an estate.
Right.
So it gets appraised all the time. But specifically on something like this, we want to make sure we get the best appraisal.
Paint a picture for me. You've probably looked at these, and you might have two or three of your own favorites. But describe a couple of these vehicles for us.
For me, I'm not much of a car expert myself, but I just know for me it's the old Ford cars that, we have some pre-1919, I believe. We have one that has actually doesn't have real wheels. It has wooden. It's actually wheels of wood.
Okay.
But a lot of them, I know, for me, those are the ones that take you back. It's like a little slice of history, and look, the black and white movies. And he's got several, Model A's, Model T's, which I've become to learn about in this case, definitely.
Parade cars, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Brooke, go ahead. You have a question.
Well, I'm just curious. Have we learned any more, or do we know much about the owner who has died, like why he had these cars and who he was, how he afforded them? Anything about him?
We don't have a lot of personal information. We do know that he collected these for quite some time. Especially a few of the neighbors have given us some limited information.
And he was a plumber, right? Wasn't he?
Yes, we believe he was, because one of the really older truck style type of car actually still has the writing of, of a plumbing service, and it has his last name on it. So we believe that that's what he did as far as making a living. He obviously couldn't afford to have this type of collection. I just think maybe perhaps as he aged, it got really difficult to, especially since it's not covered, it must have gotten very difficult to keep these cars in good condition.
What if it comes to light, and I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that this is the case, but what if it comes to light that this guy was the leader of a vast car theft ring? Would it change the county's position on what to do with this and how it's going to play along with the estate?
Definitely. I know that also with the appraisal, we're also looking at confirming through the Department of Motor Vehicles, titles, if it's possible for most of these cars. Some of them are not. They're not all 1920s and 30s, but we do want to, when the appraisal gets officially done, we also want to be able to connect those dots, because that would be very important.
How long before you officially put up registration for an auction?
Well, I know we were hoping in mid-May, maybe the end of May, we're hoping to still make that deadline. It's not really a deadline. It's just, I think, what we want it to be able to do. But there's some circumstances in the particular case that, I can't go into details, but the appraisal is the big thing. If we could get that official appraisal, and we're working really hard, just like we worked so hard to get all those cars into our lot. None of them were drivable.
Is the collection available for people to come by and tour, assuming that they're not afraid of possums and rats?
Well, hopefully most of the possums and rats, we have already gone through every vehicle, believe it or not. And hopefully they have, you know, removed. I'm hoping new ones will not make their home. Mm-hmm. We do have a lot of these cars inside metal containers, so we're hoping to you know, at least protect them from more damage of the elements.
But they're not available for touring yet.
They're not. I believe when we do determine an auction date, we are thinking of setting up some open house hours so that people can definitely, if they're physically here in Orange County, can come and view them. I'm sure we're going to also make them available somehow online.
Yeah.
We do have an email that we did create for people who are interested, and as soon as we have something in mind, we're going to respond to
it. Good. What's that?
It is Classic Car Auction with no space. So Classic Car Auction at da.ocgov.com.
Classic Car Auction at da.ocgov.com.
Correct.
All right. We will put a link to that up there, and I can't wait to come inspect the cars because, you know, I don't want to buy a bill of goods, and I want to kick the tires, the wooden tires, and see what happens.
All right.
Well, great to talk with you, and I can't wait for all of this to happen, and what a thrill, and I'm glad that you got a little bit of a curveball there in the DA's office. And you are the supervising deputy public administrator in the County of Orange, Rosie Arellano. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. How about that? You want to get one of those cars?
I do. I love classic cars. I love old cars.
Those are parade cars, aren't they? All right. Hey, here's a question for you. How comfortable are you just letting it all go in a public restroom? Or at a friend's or a family member's house, you know, in the bathroom. You don't care how loud or how smelly it gets. It's Mother Nature at work, baby. No big deal, right? Maybe not. But why not? I mean, what's the matter with society? This is normal. We all do the same thing. We'll answer most of your embarrassing bathroom questions with an expert. Yes, an expert. Next, here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, Adda.com, and you're at our website, assuming you have mastered the use of a browser. It's easy, but we're also on iTunes and iHeart, Stitcher, Spreaker, all those different places. Tune in, and you can listen live. Visit the How to Listen page at PhilHewlettandFriends.com, and you'll get every possibility so that you can get your fix of this program. Hey, our next guest's career took a sharp turn when he went from environmental lawyer to bathroom photographer. His latest book is called Flush, Celebrating Bathrooms Past and Present. It's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com, and he's got quite a potty mouth, from what I understand. Let's meet him. Steve Gottlieb is his name. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good to be here, Phil.
Yeah, all right. Bathroom photography. Now, that's a gig I don't think springs to mind at high school career day.
Well, there's an opportunity for me. I can go and visit high schools. I don't think anyone does what I do.
Now, yeah, it is unique. I mean, describe that job for us,
will
you?
First of all, let's back up and just be clear. I left environmental law after 10 years and became a photographer.
Oh.
Not a bathroom photographer, a commercial photographer.
Well, where's the fun in that? Where's the fun in describing that as we lead into
exactly.
this conversation?
Yeah, but that's a little, you know, that's a little bit boring.
Yeah.
So it was only more recently that the idea came to me for doing a book about bathrooms, and I discovered in my research that no one has ever done a book of photographs about bathrooms, and I have done them across the country and some international, and they're, you know, quality photographs and some text to go along with them.
Yeah.
That tells people about the secret room that people are curious about, certainly, you know, very interested in, but don't talk about.
Did you always have a love of bathrooms? Did you see there was a sense of Americana that ultimately drew you to this, or was it something else? I'm trying to understand, wrap my yeah. head around it.
Well, actually, I don't think I had a whole lot more interest in bathrooms than most people, which is to say I had a lot of interest, but I didn't ever talk about it or exercise that interest, except when I did my travels, and I've traveled extensively, especially in the United States, been to all 50 states, done a couple of books on America. When I saw a bathroom, just like when I saw anything that was really interesting, if it was a really interesting bathroom, I took a picture. And then I gathered a few of those pictures and showed them to an audience along with some other pictures, and the best reaction I got of my photographs were the ones of the bathrooms. And I thought, my goodness, there is something here that I didn't, that I wasn't conscious of. So that's when I found out nobody else had done a book, and I thought, you know, it's hard to find something
yeah.
that nobody else has done.
Well, and you're right. I mean,
so I went after it.
Everybody yeah. comes up with great ideas, and they find out a minute later, oh, somebody's already doing that. But in this case,
exactly.
I think you nailed it. I wonder if you have a picture of this particular bathroom, and I know it exists. In fact, there are probably a million of them. You're on the road. You pass that sign that says last stop, and you blow right past it. And a couple of hours later, you've got to go real bad, and you don't think you're going to make it. And finally, there it is. I could see it on the horizon. There's the Esso sign or whatever. It's a terrible Herbst gas station, and you're in the middle of nowhere, and you pull up. And there's the bathroom. The door's locked. You run back inside. The guy gives you a key. You go in. You unlock the key, and you go inside. And somebody must have completely combusted. They exploded. Everything is completely a mess. There's feces everywhere, urine on the floor, and it's your only shot. And that bathroom is at that gas station in every state, in every county, I think. Am I right?
Well, I guess there are some like that. I tend to think of them more as a New York subway city, a New York subway system kind of bathroom. But yeah, and you, it's interesting that that's one of the things you bring up, because we all have a story or stories about the time we really needed to go.
Yeah.
We really remember that. It sears into the brain.
And at that moment, you lose all consciousness of any embarrassment or awareness of being demure when you enter a public restroom or the restroom at somebody's house.
Gotta go.
Yeah, you just you let it all go. And it's natural to do that, is it not? I mean, why are we so uptight about the bathroom?
Well, I mean, it is a waste product, after all.
Yes.
And there is a smell to it that most people would describe, at least describing other people's smells, as not particularly pleasant. And but then also what I found is it's very much a cultural phenomenon. So what I mean by that is nowadays everyone expects to have a private bathroom. You know, when you go out to a hotel, you want a private bathroom. In a restaurant, you expect a private stall.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start photographing bathrooms from back in history, as I have, you find that it wasn't that many decades ago that people shared stalls, that people would share an outhouse. Sometimes there would be three or even four whole outhouses, which meant, say, if you were George Washington, who designed his own outhouse at Mount Vernon, you might be doing affairs of state while sitting literally your knee touching some, you know, president or secretary of state from some other country.
Talk about a wide stance.
So
you know, here's the gig.
Cultural, you know?
Yeah, and in American culture, and I don't know how much this is the case in other countries as well, there's the one gig. You go into the restroom at the restaurant or wherever you are, the clubhouse, and you go inside, and there's the poor guy sitting on a stool with a table of Aquavelva and breath mints, and he waits for you to come out of the bathroom after you've done your business, and you wash your hands. He hands you a paper towel, and then he offers you a mint and waits for a tip. And he's got to sit in there amongst all the fumes throughout whatever period of time he's got to be clocked in on a good day's work. I mean, what kind of a gig is that? Where do you have to be in life to accept that kind of job? Unless perhaps you're this kind of fellow, you just love bathrooms.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to be accepting that kind of a job real soon. You know, that's employment of last resort. There aren't, you know, most listeners won't even know what you're talking about because there are fewer and fewer bathroom attendants. I can't remember the last time I was offered a towel by one, probably several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go into some fancy hotels sometimes.
Yeah.
And you see that. But that's the kind of job that's, you know.
Well, here's what matters to people, Steve Gottlieb, author of the book Flush, Celebrating Bathrooms Past and Present. What matters to people is over or under the preferred toilet paper configuration. Which way are we going?
That's a hot question.
It is.
I didn't even know it was such a contested matter until I recently got remarried, and I decided that I would show a little wisdom this time around and kind of abdicate where there were what I consider trivial differences. So I am an under person. She is an over person.
Oh.
And so we didn't debate it. I didn't challenge her. I have adapted to over. But I am in the minority, not only that I prefer under, but I actually don't care all that much. Most people really care. They get used to doing it a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Over.
They'll turn it around, you know, if you're in their house or maybe even if they're in your house.
How rude.
They will turn it around to what they consider the right way.
I'm going to throw a variable in here. I'm going to say under for spoke, over for hook. You know how they have these hooks now for toilet paper? If you have a hook, I think it works better over. And if you have a spoke, not a spoke, an axle, I guess, right through the middle, then you need it to be under.
I get the under. How is under ever any good?
Look at this. See, we're already arguing.
This whole time,
it.
I thought you guys were talking about how you wipe, not which configuration paper was in.
There, we finally got some bathroom humor
wipe.
In there.
Yeah. So I'm envisioning, because of the strong feeling, maybe I'll go back to my law school.
Yeah.
And we'll have a discussion. I'll generate a discussion among my alumni friends.
Yeah. I bet you have. I bet
toilet paper over or under.
Yeah.
That is the question.
It's the thesis. I bet you have a website, Steve.
I surely do. What? It's Gottlieb Photo, GOTTLIEB, photo.com. The book is very easily available by going to Amazon and putting in Flush plus my last name, Gottlieb, or just Flush Celebrating.
I'll make it easier. It's the number one link in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Steve Gottlieb, a pleasure to speak with you. Happy flushing.
Oh, well, it's been fun, Phil. Thank you.
All right. Hey, that's it for hour one of the program. There's so much more to come, including what's healthier for you, exercise or downing a whole bunch of chocolate? And we have four April Fool's Day pranks that'll probably cause a breakup. Plus, our travel guy roams the Pacific Northwest. Those stories and more in the second hour, coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. It's a music rodeo here on Phil Hewlett and Friends, and this is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others, and we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. In this hour, oh, this is a delicious story. All I can say is please shut up and behave yourself in the movie theater, will you? Plus, are you ready for Duck Dynasty the musical? The friends are here, Brooke Peterson and Chris Martin. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. All right, here we go with our first story of this here hour on the program. And Brooke, I think we've all experienced this. When we come in, we pay our money, we sit down, we get our popcorn, whatever it is, our enormous soda, more soda than we should humanly be allowed to drink, but somehow we drink it because there's so much salt and butter on that, or butter product.
And you're kind of required to at the movie.
Yeah, and watching the movie, you just get all tense and excited, and you end up eating about 6 pounds of popcorn, right?
Yes.
Yeah, isn't that great? Nothing better. But then, if you're unfortunate, like I think we've all been, you could be sitting right behind or in front. It's usually worse if the people are behind you. And they're just absolutely unconscious to the fact that other people are in the theater and want to enjoy the movie.
Obnoxious, disrespectful, yes, rude.
Yeah, yeah. But every now and then, these people will get their comeuppance. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Comeuppance?
Comeuppance. They get it. They get it done.
Like what happened this time?
Okay. So this is the situation. This past weekend, I believe this was Friday night, a mom takes her daughter to see Cinderella, the new movie, very popular. And this is in Florida, by the way, a little town right outside of – oh, sorry. This is in Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
They go to the movie theater, and there are a couple of girls sitting behind them that are doing exactly what we were just talking about, being rude, loud, obnoxious, giggling, talking. And the mom turned around and said something to them a couple times throughout the movie, and no change, nothing doing. Mm-hmm. So after the movie, the mom tells her daughter to go to the car, and she walks over to these two girls, who are also there with their brother, by the way. There's three of them.
Is he older, younger?
He's older. He was there as their chaperone. These girls are 13 years old.
Oh.
So there's that age thing, too, which is already kind of, you know,
right.
13. So she says something to the girls and says, you know, just so you know, your behavior was unacceptable. My husband was just laid off, and this is basically the last time I'm going to be able to take my daughter to the movie theater for quite a while, and you ruined it.
Wow.
So they go home. Everybody goes home. The son goes home, tells their mom what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And this mom of these two girls was so upset, so mortified, humiliated, and embarrassed for her daughters.
That's refreshing.
I know. It's
fantastic. That never happens anymore.
But then she goes another step. She goes onto Facebook and just as a Hail Mary throws up this posting saying, I know this is a long shot, but I'm looking for the mother. And she described the situation. Just so you know, these girls are being punished. They will write you a letter of apology. They owe you an apology. They will write a letter. And best yet, they will take money out of their allowance to repay this mom and her daughter to go see the movie again or the next time they go to the movies. So they will have to pay for out of their allowance, you know, and it's like a proper punishment. So she posts this on Facebook. It spreads all over town. I think the sheriff's office gets a hold of it and reposts it. And there's like 215,000 likes based on the sheriff's posting.
Yes.
Long story short, they did find the mom. They have made amends. The mom apparently was so overcome by this other mother's
gesture.
Action that she said it's nice to know there are still good people in the world. And she's like, the girls were girls. You know, they're you know, they have learned a lesson.
Yeah,
and,
I hope so.
Yeah, well, I think so.
There are other people in the room besides you, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Get beyond the end of your nose for once.
And then I just love that this, I don't know, good parenting. It's almost refreshing to hear about a good parenting story.
And then you hear about kids who are far too young to be out of the grasp and the sight of their parents, and they're just wandering around town. There's another one of these stories, right?
Yeah, so up in Philadelphia, from Alabama to Philadelphia, a bus driver is doing his job at 3 o'clock in the morning and sees a little girl come into his bus and sit down, and she's just riding the bus like no big deal.
How little of a girl?
4 years old.
What?
Preschool, 4 years old, 3 o'clock in the morning, by herself. And she says that she's just looking for a snack. she woke up hungry, I suppose, and she's wanting a slushie.
Not a homeless girl.
No, 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 no. And she's, you know, she there's a picture of her. There's a video of her online. Cute little girl, of course.
Yeah.
And she just snuck out the back. And apparently it was pouring down rain on top of it all.
She wanted a snack. What she
wanted? She wanted a slushie.
Slushie.
She was just saying, I want a... And the bus driver pulled over, took her to, I think, the local hospital, and they tracked down her parents.
Well, they don't serve slushies at the hospital. Isn't
yeah.
Supposed
well,
to
you
take
know, she's just like, hello, where's my slushie?
What a killjoy. Right,
yeah.
Chris?
Yeah. Bring her over to the local AMPM. Get her what she needs.
Buy her the slushie and then take her to the hospital.
And then you stick her on the next bus that's going the other direction, and she's not your
problem
anymore.
No, you don't do that. You drop her off with the authorities so she finds her way home. The bus driver doesn't know where she lives, and she may not know where she lives either at that point.
She just wanted a slushie.
That's all she wanted. How'd she get out of the house, and what do the parents have to say? But you don't know that yet.
Well, she just, I don't think the house was necessarily on lockdown. Somehow she was able to just walk out the back door.
Mm-hmm. Kids will
do
that.
Of course, they were sound asleep, I'm sure.
So stories from good parenting to bad parenting.
Yeah, yeah. And then you could leave a mark on this planet, and not just with human beings, but with your four-legged friends. Isn't that right, Brooke?
Oh, this is so sweet. I am also a dog lover here on The Phil Hewlett Show, and there's a story... out of Mexico, actually, this woman, a woman died, and at her, this woman, Margarita Suarez, and this is from Cuernavaca, Morelos, Mexico, by the way, just in case you know where that is.
Oh, sure, I've been there.
Yeah, Cuernavaca.
Yeah.
She's passed away, and apparently in her lifetime, she was a huge animal lover and took special actions and care to take care of the neighborhood strays, all the stray dogs, stray cats, stray whatever. She was on top of it, and she was very well known for that. So at her funeral, without any kind of explanation whatsoever, a pack of stray dogs walk into the funeral home where her casket is, you know, laid out, and just sit down quietly for all day and all night.
To pay their respects.
Just hanging out there. And the thing is, these aren't even dogs that she had any contact with.
Oh, words on the street.
The funeral was like 800 miles away from where she lived. And so these were just random stray dogs that decided to come into her room and literally just lie around the room for, you know, hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And just very quietly, very serenely, just very... peacefully just be with her.
Well, the dogs have that communication network at night, you know, when they bark a certain way and one dog hears it down the street, he barks, he sends the message along the way, and they could go 800 miles, don't you think?
But how did they know it was her? It was just an amazing story, actually.
Dogs do have that communication network,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, they do. They're
I think I saw that in a cartoon, a Disney cartoon. Which one was
well,
that?
Well, that makes it true. Yeah,
yeah?
That's true.
Right?
You might be referring to Homeward Bound, but that wasn't a cartoon.
It wasn't a cartoon?
No,
no,
Homeward Bound
action.
Wasn't. But those dogs actually spoke telekinetically, those dogs and cats.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't that then.
What about Milo and Otis? Is that a cartoon?
Yeah, no, that was real action, too.
Oh.
And it wasn't Air Bud, I'm pretty sure of that. Okay,
oh,
fine. We'll figure it out. All right. So, Chris, there last show, we were talking about the Lollapalooza and Coachella and the big music festivals and all of that. And we come to find out now that there are certain things that they just don't want you bringing inside. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's certain things you can't bring into a music festival. I mean, some pretty obvious things like your knives and guns,
yeah,
right?
Your own music.
Yeah. That's it, too.
Yeah.
But the newest thing on the list is actually selfie sticks. They've been banned from Lollapalooza and Coachella.
Why?
Well, because they're safety hazards, Phil.
Oh.
If you're not familiar with what a selfie stick is, it's a device that grasps your cell phone at the end of a stick, and it allows you to take pictures from further away so you can fit yourself and your friends or whatever's going on in the background.
Stuck in the crowd, in the mosh pit, whatever, yeah. But you might impale somebody or put an eye out with that selfie stick.
That's the thing. These selfie sticks are 5'6", sometimes longer, 5-6 feet sometimes longer. And, you know, you start swinging that thing around.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You'll put an eye out.
Yeah.
Coachella actually listed the item on its prohibited items list as narcissistics, which I thought was a pretty cool take on the name.
Narcissistics. I like that.
That's good.
Yeah. So they listed it for safety reasons and also to speed up security checks at the gates, which makes sense. You know,
there are other things.
What are you doing here with this giant stick?
They also ban a bunch of other things. Like you're not supposed to have a Sharpie. You can't bring a Sharpie inside.
That makes sense. But good luck trying to...
Why?
Well, you might impale somebody with your Sharpie while you're trying to write your name on them.
So it has nothing to do with writing on people as they're passed out or sleeping?
Oh, right. You might deface public property with a selfie, with a Sharpie.
Yeah.
Not
or
with
your
a selfie.
Ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, right, to face your
ex-boyfriend. I'm sure that's real difficult to sneak into a music festival, by the way, a Sharpie.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're going to catch that on everybody.
Yeah.
It's made of plastic. You can't catch it on the metal detector. It would fit in your shoe.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a Sharpie. creepy.
Yeah. Like, what if you're trying to get an autograph?
Yes.
I tried to sneak a fire extinguisher in once. I thought that would be a great deal of fun, you know, at the festival, just start blasting everybody with a fire extinguisher. But no, they caught me at the door. On the subject of selfies, though, I mean, people keep getting more and more creative with how to take a selfie.
Yeah, they do. And I was just recently, as I was researching this story, they showed me another device that people have created for us to be able to take selfies, and it's the shoe selfie. The shoe selfie. So this is a device that you put on the end of your shoe, so when you're kicking back on your couch or maybe you're in a boat hanging out with a friend, you just kick your leg out with your phone attached to the end of your shoe off your the toe area, and then you can snap a picture of yourself and whoever else might be in the picture.
Yeah. All right.
It's a way you could get at least what? You could get a good solid 5 feet, depending on your height.
That's enough.
Yeah.
But I think it's ingenious.
It's enough to capture the landscape.
Here's what it is. It's the pervs who take the upskirt photos. That's who came up with
you're
that.
You're so right.
Isn't that right?
That is bad.
It is.
Yeah.
That's what I thought of immediately. That's what... Well, no, I mean, because I'm
because you have a filthy mind. We get it, Phil.
Sensitive to the needs of the ladies out there, and there are all kinds of pervs out
that
there.
That is,
to,
yeah, that's just ripe for problems.
I mean, it's easier than over polishing the toe of your wingtips, right?
Yeah, or trying to place a mirror on there, glue a mirror on there. But listen, if somebody looks down and they see a Galaxy S5 on the end of your toe, I'm pretty sure they're going to notice it.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
legs.
If they look down, they might not look down.
By the way, why are you standing so close to me?
Oh, God. So creepy.
By the way, we were talking about dogs, amazing dogs, and equal time for the cats now. A new study found the music you play can really affect your cats. When cats heard rock music like AC/DC, they showed the highest signs of stress. But when they heard classical music, it calmed them down. So cats are not headbangers.
That makes sense.
We come to find out.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. All right. And we have more music on the program, none that you'll get to listen to, but just the same. I had no idea that they were going to make a musical out of this. And you'll find out what that is next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. We're on Twitter at FAF Show. You know, FAF, P-H-A-F, like Phil Hewlett and Friends. And we're on Facebook. Just search Phil Hewlett and Friends and like us. Thank you. We need to be liked. And you know what? A lot of people like these guys, and a lot of people don't like these guys. But I have a sense that perhaps they don't care because they're just moving on with their life and coming up with new ways to market Duck Dynasty, Chris.
Yeah, and this time it's going to be in musical form. Picture like a Broadway musical. Yeah.
All right.
It's called the Duck Commander musical, and it's on. It's based on the best-selling book by Willie and Corey Roberts from Duck Dynasty.
I like the way you
said
that.
That's the reality television show.
It's on.
It's on. Based on their best-selling book, The Duck Commander Family. Preview performances start April 8th, so mark your calendars, and it will make its premiere debut at the Rio in Las Vegas on April 15th. So if you're a fan of Duck Dynasty, heck, if you're a hater of Duck Dynasty, you might want to go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
They put on a nationwide search for some viable cast members, and they enlisted a cast full of Broadway veterans. It's a rags-to-riches story, 90 minutes of down-home Southern spirit and humor.
Are you going to see it?
Bring your duck call. Wah, 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 wah. No, am I going to see it?
Yeah,
yeah no. You are.
I don't know. I can't.
No,
totally seeing it.
I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, you
want to
go with me?
I can't remember the last musical I saw, let alone wanting to go see Duck Dynasty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I'm going to go see a musical, it's going to be like Phantom of the Opera or Les Mis.
I think it was.
I still want to see Wicked.
I think it was Cats. That one. It was either Cats or what was that one with a helicopter that crashed? It was like a Vietnam story. You know?
Oh, Miss Saigon.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
That was a musical, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Even the Spider-Man musical, awesome. I'd go see.
I can't
that
hum a single song from either of those shows, but oh, yeah, Cats. There was. I could probably
Memory.
Hum. Yeah, I could probably hum a couple of those. you're the lady in the room, and you correct me if I'm wrong. You go
okay,
to the,
what do you got?
You go to the gynecologist, Chris. And you
nice.
Know,
I want to hear this. Go on.
You put on the paper skirt or robe or whatever it is, and you lay back on the thing, and you put your legs up in that cold stirrup deal, right? And it's not an empowering situation.
It's awkward.
It's awkward. Right, and then the doctor comes in and snaps on the latex, and then starts probing around with more cold instruments that probably shouldn't be going in places where they're going. But just the same, it
safety first.
Yeah, doctors say, oh yeah, sure, this is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And what kind of a doctor grows up and says, well, this is what I want to do anyway. They want to make sure that the ladies are healthy, right? And that's an important part of their health care. But believe it or not, according to a new survey, 7% of single women perhaps find this, they're on that table with their legs in the stirrup, and whoo, baby, this is sexy.
Oh, God.
Because they'd love to date a gynecologist because they say he knows what he's doing down there.
No.
And here are four more results from this new survey. 85% of people say they find doctors attractive. 45% of men, 35% of women say the whole scrubs and lab coat look is the sexiest uniform of any job.
Hmm.
Even those paper shoes that they wear?
I had a crush on my veterinarian.
Well, that's different.
Yeah.
42% of men have flirted with their doctor while she was treating them. And which raises a question. I mean, still, largely, the majority of gynecologists are men, I think, is an accurate thing. There are more women than there ever have been.
It is so odd to me that a man would choose that as his specialty.
I agree. But for men, on the other side, what would you say? The urologist, right?
Or the proctologist? Or the...
Well, yeah, the procto. Well, that goes for men and women. But the urologist for men and women, true. But the guy that checks out your junk is the urologist. Okay, so how many female urologists are there these days?
Good question.
Yeah,
probably not very many.
And does the lady check your junk? That's what I want to know. And can guys handle that the same way women handle a male gynecologist?
That's an excellent question.
Because guys can't handle stuff. I mean, there's physical evidence to the fact that we can't handle stuff in many cases.
Yeah, I don't think it happens very often where a guy has
either.
A female urologist.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so if you had a list of, say, five urologists and one of them was clearly a woman, would you purposely not go to her and go to a man?
I don't know. If I'm like those 7% of women who find a gynecologist sexy, and I'm a man who finds a female urologist sexy, perhaps I would go. But then it could all end very badly.
Yeah, you have to get a look at her first, right, to make that decision. If you're basing it on looks.
Really?
Well, you're saying, would you rather see a woman or a man? First and foremost, you'd rather see a man because he has the same parts and pieces that you do.
Let's be creepy men for a second and say, okay, bring on the examination, right? Let's go. Let's get this going.
Sure. Yeah. But see, I think that implies that you're going to see the female because maybe she's attractive, so you'd have to get a look at the doctor first, right?
But that's exactly not what I'm saying.
Doctor, I got it.
You're saying which one's more confident? The male has...
It's not based on attractiveness, but just a comfort level. Like, do you feel comfortable going to a woman for that particular specialty and need?
I wouldn't feel uncomfortable, but I'd feel more comfortable with a man.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fine. Doctor,
by the way, I would feel a little bit uncomfortable. I think most guys would.
Doctor, I got a little thing right here. No. It's like, no, a little more to the left.
And actually, if she was really...
little lower, a little slower.
Sexy and hot, wouldn't it be even more awkward to go there with a problem down
there?
Yeah.
If you have a problem. But usually, isn't it just turn your head and cough? Okay, everything seems to be okay.
No, it's a lot... You haven't been worked up properly.
I guess not.
There's more to it. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah, there's a poke and a pull and a
I haven't
grab
had
and
that
a flick
turn your head and cough since I tried to join Pop Warner. Are you kidding me?
No. But it's nothing that you would be... Is it anything you'd be ashamed of having a woman do?
Not ashamed. No, okay. I don't think that's the point. But I think, you know, you gotta worry when somebody starts, you know, messing with your stuff and your frame of mind at the moment. And again, if you find the doctor sexy, it could become awkward.
Confusing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't, you know, it's like a train track, and you can't get the guy to switch the tracks, you know, soon enough when the train's coming to the station.
Could sometimes. Be awkward. Could yeah. be awesome. Yeah. You know? You never know.
Oh, one more thing off of this list, lest we forget. Women are almost 3 times more likely to say they'd want to date a pediatrician than a gynecologist. 3 times more likely to say they'd want to date a pediatrician than a gynecologist.
Yeah, well, the gynecologist was only 7%. That is a very tiny minority.
But when do women see a pediatrician? That's when they bring their kid to the doctor. And in theory, dad's back at home.
Well, single moms.
Yeah, well, okay, fine.
And an educated, successful man who's good with kids. Hello.
Well, see? Here we get the perspective. Mm-hmm. It's always nice to have the women's perspective in the room.
Got to have it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I guess you do. Hey, our travel guy continues his journey through the Pacific Northwest. We don't know where he's going to end up, and today we don't have a clue where he is either. Hopefully he has a clue where he is. Talking about Gary Warner, and he joins us next from somewhere on the road, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. We're going to talk a little travel now, and our travel guy, if you haven't gathered, has been out on the road for some time, traveling north of here, up the coast, inland a little bit, more or less in the northwest, sometimes Pacific, sometimes not. But we're not exactly sure where he is today, and we're going to find out. There he is now. He's our travel guy, Gary Warner. So where in the Pacific or in the northwest or both are you today?
Well, I'm actually in Eugene, Oregon, though I just arrived, so I thought we'd talk a little bit about where I've been the last 5 days, and that's Portland.
Oh.
It's been it's always a great experience there, but one of the things I wanted to – that I kind of want to talk about is how, you know, it's a great eating town. It gets into all the gourmet magazines and everything like that, you know, with the local produce and all the farms are just outside, but really – the town is really famous for coffee and donuts.
Coffee and donuts in Eugene?
Coffee? No.
No, in Portland.
Portland.
Portland. Okay. All right. Good.
Eugene's next week, maybe.
All right. Good.
No, coffee and donuts in Portland. You know, this is a place where, you know, there's a – if you ever go to one of these fancy markets, you know, in Southern California, they usually have the cold Stumptown coffee. This is the places where, you know, it costs like, you know, $3, $4, $5 a bottle. Yeah. But here, Stumptown's from Portland. In fact, Stumptown is one of the nicknames of Portland. When they were building it, they built it so fast that when they chopped down those trees, they didn't have time to take out the stumps.
No.
And they had so many accidents, they just whitewashed the stumps.
Yeah.
So that, you know, the horses could get around them. So anyway, they go back to that. Stumptown Coffee, if you go to Stumptown Coffee at like 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
Right when it opens up, you get one of the weirdest scenes, I think, in any major American city. And that's this very sort of like cosmopolitan coffee house, you know, where they're pulling cappuccinos and macchiatos and espressos. And everybody's sitting there with these pink boxes in front of them that have these sort of like Grateful Dead kind of like graphics on them. And what that is it's from a few doors up, which is the other half, which is Voodoo Donuts.
Oh.
Voodoo Donuts is the creator of the Bacon Maple Bar. Which set off sort of a donut renaissance, not only in you like that pronunciation?
Yeah.
Renaissance. Not only in Portland, but throughout the Northwest. And the town is built on that. There's a lot of coffee competitors for Stumptown. There's some really high-end donut places here in Portland. And so if you want your caffeine and your sugar, it's a great place to go.
That sounds great. So aside from donuts and coffee, what's special about Portland?
The rain.
Oh,
and, you get a lot of rain. I mean, you know, they love to call it the Rose City. Well, they call it the Rose City because they can make a lot of awful lot of roses here because of the rain. Now, it's a great town. What I like about it is, it's like a lot of my favorite cities around the world. It really is a collection of small villages. So they'll be a different neighborhood, Coley or Division, places like that, and there'll be a selection of shops, and then it sort of moves on to another neighborhood that may have a completely different feel to it. So you get everything from sort of like punky to hippie to very straight-laced business type communities in a fairly short stretch,
all mingling together.
Yeah, so you can do whatever, however you're feeling. If you're doing the suit and shirt and tie thing, and you want to go downtown and mingle with the bankers, you can do that, or you can go up to some of these funkier areas. One of the great things about Portland is they have a fantastic light rail system that takes you from the airport right into town and then all over the place.
Yeah. So, yeah. And right there on the Willamette River, and a lot of times when you're in a city that's on a river, you think, all right, there are one of two things. It's going to be polluted because of industry, or it's going to be cemented over like they are in Southern California. And, right. And you don't get to enjoy what a river should be, a beautiful thing filled with water and wildlife and trees and all of that. What's the Willamette like right there in Portland?
Well, beginning in the 1970s, the city really started redoing its downtown area and around the river, and basically said, we got these great resources, a lot of industry has left, let's reclaim this. So there is still this industrial feel downtown with these iron bridges and the such. It's a different feel than, say, Seattle, which has a very slick feel to it. So you still got that sort of grit there, but they built bike paths all along there. They really cleaned up the river. It's a fantastic place for riding bicycles or hiking or walking. It's really built so that it's one of the few American cities in the West that I can go to and have a good time and not rent a car.
Yeah, but it seems, and I'm looking at it on the map, and I thought Portland was a lot closer to the coast, but it looks like quite a road trip to get out there.
It is quite a road trip to go out. You go out to Astoria, which is a great town and one of the oldest towns in the West. It's named after John Jacob Astor. They used to have that was where the beaver pelts would go out of. But that's where Lewis and Clark ended up at the end of their the voyage of discovery. Fort Clatsop's out there, and they have a recreation of that. So the area is both, it's like the West, it's very young, but it's also got history going back to, the 18th century.
Yeah, and they've got a Rockaway Beach in Oregon, by the way.
Yes, they do. They have a lot of, these are not Southern California beaches. You're not going to go and in your, bikini or board shorts and run around for the
summer.
No,
you're going to have to put on some boots because these are not tourist beaches for sure.
Right. Well, they are tourist beaches that are different. Like Cannon Beach is a fantastic beach. It's super wide, super flat, and it's kind of hard a little bit. So people get like these three-wheeled tricycles that they then hook up to kites.
Yeah.
And they go hauling all over, up and down these the beaches. And then there's over by this big rock, Haystack Rock, there's just fantastic tidal pools with these blue and orange starfish. It's a great experience, but no, you're not going to go and it's no Band of Soleil.
No,
I
mean, the closest you get to that is what, Lincoln City, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, or Newport. I mean, you can do that sort of thing, or Seaside. You can do that sort of thing, but realistically, I mean, in Southern California, there's people in Hawaii and Florida say, I don't know how you go out in that water in the summertime. It's
right.
Too cold.
Yeah,
well,
everybody's,
up here, it really is too cold.
Everybody's got their standards. All right, so you did say you get a ton of rain out there. And in the downtown area, you talked about this mix. So you have a mix of various things. But it's still kind of a major. I mean, Portland's one of the biggest, most populated cities in the country, is it not?
Yes,
it's
it is.
It's a major metropolis.
City. I don't have the stats here in front of me, but certainly, yeah, it's a major league city.
But
you get the Warriors and things like that.
Do you get
not
a touch?
The Timberwolves.
Do you get a touch of the quaint? I mean, is there any kind of a Main Street America ethic in there?
Well, there is downtown. Certainly, there's some buildings that date back. Quite a ways, but no, it's more, like I said, it's more the neighborhoods where you find those sort of things, sort of like the 19th century neighborhoods as they expanded out. That's really where I think the heart and soul of Portland is. Downtown is an off of high rise buildings, that sort of thing.
Okay, and so
there's not like a Pioneer Park area, like in Seattle.
Yeah. All right. And so when you're in Portland, what's the absolute thing, just for a little bit of a trip, because you're surrounded by a bunch of things worth taking a look at, what's the absolute thing you must see when you go to Portland?
That you must see when you go to Portland. Wow. You know, I think the gardens are probably the most fantastic thing, the Japanese garden and the mm-hmm. Rose Garden, mm-hmm. particularly for we Southern Californians. Obviously, that's not exactly a wild thing to do, but that and just, you know, the area around Division Street where you can go and have dinner at the old Oyster House, which goes back almost a century, and then you can go over to Stumptown and you can go over to Voodoo Donuts and just really get a flavor of kind of like a honky-tonky, scruffier Portland than the Portland today.
I like that. I got to get me a bacon maple bar. That sounds delicious.
Bacon maple bar, man. They used to have these donuts there. I got to tell you, they've become a little slick since they've become famous.
Yep.
They used to have donuts that were in the shape of well, let's just say things that you wouldn't take your kids to go see. And the what used to be the front door is now the side door. They're big time. They've got three of these places now. You know, I just went to the one Voodoo Donut number 2, and they've got black velvet painting of Kenny Rogers over the thing. You know, so they've really gotten into their.
You're taking a gamble when you're having one of those donuts.
For $100, you can get a 4 foot tall coffin, wooden coffin filled with donuts.
So, ooh, no, you're talking.
Yeah.
Well, Gary Warner, you're going to keep your travels going in the Northwest. Do you have any idea where you're headed next?
I'm going to be either up in I'm either going to head further north in Seattle, or I'll be further south down here in Oregon.
All right. Flip a coin, and you let us know next week.
You know it. I don't always like to know where I'm going. You know, I follow the rain or follow away from the rain.
Just keep your eyes on the road, will you?
You got it. I'll do that.
Gary Warner, we'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
All right, you two. Up next, the drones are coming. Well, not too soon, but they're being tested, and we're talking about deliveries right to your doorstep using a drone. And also, can the folks at McDonald's just get it right? Come on. You know what? When I'm ready to order breakfast at McDonald's, I'm going to sleep in a little bit first, and that's why I'm ordering breakfast, is because I didn't wake up early enough to cook it myself. Come on, McDonald's people. We got updates on these and more stories next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, and here we go. It's our final segment, and we usually save the best stuff for last. And how can you make it any better, Phil? This has been... All right. You're too complimentary. Save it for another show. So, Brooke... we've been talking for some time with our tech guy and otherwise about Amazon and their designs to deliver things to us real fast.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they use to do that?
Well, what else? Drones. The topic of the year. Drones, drones, drones. So, yeah, Amazon has been saying for quite a while that they have this plan to implement the use of drones for home delivery systems.
Yeah.
And ultimately, what they want to do is be able to deliver a package to a person's doorstep 30 minutes after you place the order.
Wow. 30 minutes?
30 minutes after you place the order. And so far, the drones are being tested and planned to be used for packages that are 5 pounds or less. And apparently, according to them, that accounts for 86% of their orders, which seems kind of strange to me.
Well, that makes sense. So that when you go to the order, it says this order qualifies for free shipping, or this order qualifies for drone shipping.
Prime Air is what they're planning on calling it.
Oh.
But the thing is that they are having a really hard time getting this... off the ground, because America, the U.S. government, is really dragging their feet giving them permission to use airspace, public airspace.
Once the cat is out of the bag, it's going to be tough to reel it back in. They haven't really figured out how they're going to manage all of these drone activities.
Right. So Amazon's will like, you know, forget you. We're moving on, marching forward. And they have gone to Canada, just right over the border above Seattle in British Columbia, like 2,000 feet from the border. They have set up this secret, secure testing site for their drones. And they want to use the drones in this strip of airspace that is above 200 feet, which is theoretically above most buildings, but then below 500 feet, which is, you know, below most planes.
Airplane routes, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And so they also have that annoying whiz, that buzz of the propellers. And so at what point, how many drones do you have to get in the air before there's a constant buzz?
Right.
And it becomes so annoying that you wish...
It'll become white noise. We won't even hear it anymore.
Or it happens in Canada, and then you thank the government here for taking their time to come up with this. And they'll say, see, we didn't want you to be annoyed by all that buzzing.
Well, glad they're saying that this is like the next big thing in innovation, and the U.S. is really, you know, hampering that.
Yeah. Well, all right. I haven't decided if I want my own drone yet. But I will tell you something I do want from time to time when the wife and I decide to sleep in and nobody wants to cook breakfast. We say, okay, why don't we just go grab one of those super giant meals over at McDonald's, you know, with the pancakes and the hash browns and the sausage and the bacon and the eggs and the orange juice and the cup of coffee for like a dollar. And so you go over there and you stand in line and they say, I'm sorry, sir, we stopped serving breakfast an hour and a half ago. And what? I haven't had breakfast. And I'm standing here, and so now I got to, get a Big Mac or a filet of fish for breakfast?
Oh.
Or an apple pie?
A little tear goes down the side of your cheek?
Exactly.
Oh.
So how is McDonald's going to address this, I think, concern that most people in this country can share with me? Don't you think?
Well, there's only one way to address it, Phil.
What is that?
That's to serve breakfast longer than 11 a.m.
Well, is McDonald's going to do that?
They're talking about it. It's not implemented yet. You know, obviously, you go to McDonald's right now. If you show up at 10:30 on a weekday or 11 o'clock on a weekend, if you show up at 11:02, you are not getting your Egg McMuffin.
Mm-hmm.
They are making moves.
Shut down the production line.
Yeah, but they're stepping up and they're making moves to serve breakfast all day long. They're going to start making breakfast items available anytime at a few spots in San Diego, just south of us, so we can go beta test it out while they're trying it. This will happen next month. And if things go well down there, it could roll out nationwide. McDonald's all over will be selling their breakfast all day long. Their current policy is to stop serving at breakfast at 10:30 and 11. And
well, they're going to see.
You
know, I see people having breakfast products for dinner sometimes.
Oh, I love having breakfast for dinner.
Do you?
I've always done that. My mom, we always did that. Love it. I love having an omelet. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I think it's arguable that breakfast might be the best meal of the day.
Whether
it doesn't matter when you have it. I'm just saying, like eggs, hash browns, toast.
Can you ever get tired of that?
Pancakes.
No.
No.
No. You can't.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. I mean, I
scrambles.
Sometimes I just pour syrup on filet mignon at night just to get a sense of breakfast. Right.
I don't necessarily like breakfast at night too much, the meal of breakfast itself, early morning meal of breakfast is the best.
And what is it about the bigger the better for breakfast, right? I mean, some of the places that serve the real big, you know,
giant boys. Because you have the entire day to work it all off, so it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. And do doctors still agree and nutritionists still agree that breakfast is the most important meal of the day?
They do.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I just recently read something that was kind of countering that, actually, for the first time.
You know, funny thing about any of these types of subjects is you can find evidence to support either side.
Yeah.
But if you think about it logically, you have just stopped any sort of consumption, yet you're still burning for 8 hours straight when you sleep.
Yeah. Here's
you get up.
Here's a study. Beer and a handful of croutons is the healthiest meal you can have for lunch.
Hmm.
What?
All right. Well, I'm going to pass on that. I'm still going to stick to a sandwich.
That study?
The National Crouton Board. all right. So moving on. This is going to make you squirm a little bit. Anytime somebody gets anywhere near your eyes with sharp objects, for whatever reason, it just makes you squirm a little bit, doesn't it?
No pain, no gain.
Well, what are you talking about?
Well, do you want to be a superhero? If you could be a superhero, what would your superpower be?
Well, I got all kinds of ideas for superpower. But, who had the X-ray eyes? Was that Superman?
I think it was Dr. X-Ray.
They had lasers.
Superman had
eyes
it as well. Yeah.
Eyes are lasers.
Laser eyes?
Yeah.
Yeah, but X-ray eyes, I mean, that's great. You could see right through things, and there are all sorts of there's all sorts of fun you could have with that.
But now there is this thing. There is a company here in California that is actually able to give you night vision in your eyeballs.
How do they do that? With drops?
Drops. Well, okay. It sounds so gross. You've seen the movie Clockwork Orange where they stretch out the lids and the person can't blink and it's just a form of torture. Well, that's what they did to this person. This, by the way, was just a volunteer.
They tortured him?
Well, he wanted to be. He was like, I'll do it. He was just a researcher at this company. And he's like, I'll be the guinea pig. So they stretch out his eyeballs, his eyelids, and then drop this I don't know, solution into his eyes, like a blackish solution that is made up of many things. But one of them is called chlorine E6.
Oh, good.
Which
I'm glad we know that.
Well, it's found in deep sea fish.
Oh.
And so, I'm not sure, but they also use it for repairing people's night vision.
Well, did he really get night vision?
Yes. So he was able to, after 2 hours, the solution seeped into his eye. After 2 hours, he was able to pick out people from 50 meters away with a laser pointer, and he got it right every single time. And people who did not have the solution got it right maybe like a third.
Now was this a military application, or is it just something that somebody wants to do when they're going to go to a rave and listen to that EDM music?
Why, that's sort of up to the user, probably. How creative can you be?
I don't know. I think I'd want night vision at a rave party. Don't you think?
Maybe.
Does that sound like fun, Chris?
Yeah, it depends.
Everybody's got those little glow sticks and that sort of thing when they're at those parties. So why not have night vision?
I don't know. Would it throw off the night vision? You think that it would actually send like a flash back into the night vision and it might make you blind?
I think you would convulse and writhe around on the ground. You'd probably get trampled and die.
Well,
that would be a
temporary
problem. Plus, the reason these EDM shows, they've worked out all the kinks. They're dark for a reason.
Yeah.
EDM? What's EDM?
Electronic dance music.
Yeah.
Come on, Grandma. Get with the programs.
Oh, yeah, see, I avoid that at all costs.
Yeah. All right. Well, now, tomorrow is an important day for pranksters. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't tomorrow April Fool's Day?
I think it is. Unless you're trying to fool us.
In real time. And here are four April Fool's Day pranks that can cause a breakup. Don't do anything that involves their job. That might hurt them physically. That might make them think you're cheating. And don't fake propose or say that you're pregnant.
Ooh.
So you're saying don't do anything fun.
Yeah, more or less. That's the case.
Oh, man.
Hey, we love your comments, even if they're fake. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. We're on Twitter at Faf Show, facebook.com/Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, who's here in the studio today. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. Listen to it. Isn't it sweet? For Aaron Myers, who'll be back soon, for Brooke and for Chris Martin, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.